The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello there. This is Fred Brack, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service, and for the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from Our State magazine. Today's reading of Our State is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving our community since 1974 and underwriting our podcast for over 15 years. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. And now we return to the January 2023 edition of Our State magazine. This is a special anniversary issue, 90 years of Our State. Actually, there's very little that's devoted to the anniversary part, but there's a lot of stuff devoted to winter, as we have on the cover picture this month. Now, I go through every Our State magazine to mark up the times of the articles before I do the first reading of the month, which was last week. And I also look forward to getting to the end of the magazine where the decades series have been running since so many years. I think it started in the 40s, and we last did the 80s. I read the one that ended up in the end of the 1980s decade last month, so I was looking forward to finding the decade series for the 90s starting, and instead, oh, I'm really devastated by this, and I'm sorry, it's a sad thing for me to read this, but instead of finding the 90s decades written by Philip Gerard, I find a page that says Remembering Philip Gerard. And there's the picture of this fine gentleman, and underneath it says, on November 7th, 2022, our friend and longtime writer Philip Gerard passed away unexpectedly. In every story that he wrote for us, he helped us understand a little bit more about what it likes to be a North Carolinian. I have read his name so many times in the last 15 years, and more than just the decade series. He was a wonderful contributor. I'm sure you've heard me mention him before. There's a picture of him here. I'd never seen a picture of him before. He's a little bit on the husky side. He's got a full face, a white head of hair, and a salt and pepper mustache. And he's looking off to the side, and he's wearing a vest. And I'm going to read the article now, and then we'll go on to something more pleasant later. One of the most enduring and beloved voices of our pages, Philip Gerard was a musician, a professor of creative writing at the University of North Carolina, Wilmington, recipient of the 2019 North Carolina Award for Literature, and the author of 16 books, including his best-known work, Cape Fear Rising. To us at Our State, he was a resident historian storyteller, having mastered the balance of clarity and compassion that such a title requires. Dense with details gathered in his exhaustive research and woven together with a poet's eye view of the world, his popular Civil War and Decades series brought the broad sweep of history down to a human scale. As we reflect on Philip's contributions to our magazine and our state, we're revisiting a few of the nearly 150 stories he wrote for us and remembering the credo that always guided him. I believe it is the job of the writer to put into words what is worst and also what is best about us. To lighten up our possibilities, we discover the finest lives to which we can aspire and to inspire our readers to greatness of soul and heart. And on a one-page summary here, it says, Remembering Philip Gerard. Here is the Civil War series, May 2011 to April 2015. Over 48 installments, Philip served as a reporter on the ground, a modern witness to events that have transpired 150 years before, as he grappled with the unfinished business of the Civil War in North Carolina. Of the people whose stories he wrote, he told, rather, he wrote I have done my best to remember them all, especially the ordinary soldiers, farmers, laborers, wives, freedmen, and slaves, with compassion and empathy. And then there was Doc Watson. In July of 2012, Philip brought his insights as a musician to his profile of Doc Watson, the cover story for our North Carolina Icons issue. His memories of hearing Watson's joyful, deceptively simple music for the first time in college were all the more poignant because the issue came out weeks after Watson died in May 2012. Travel and Culture Essays, 2016, in a series of short, lyrical essays, Philip wrote about exploring the state, often alongside his wife Jill. Whether he was driving whiskey roads in the foothills, playing hammered dulcimers in the mountains, or visiting the kindred spirit mailbox on the coast, the past always played a role in his work. On the Water, Philip's love of messing around in boats helped inspire two pieces last summer. In June, he put together a primer on working boats of the Carolina coast. In August, he wrote the narrative for our photo essay about the intercoastal waterway, taking to the water in his own boat to get the details just right. And finally, the Decade Series, December 2017 to December 2022. In this follow-up to his Civil War series, Philip devoted one whole year to each pivotal decade in our state's history. From the 1940s, the decade that marked North Carolina's shift from a rural state to a rapidly modernizing one, through the 1980s, every monthly entry focused on the people and events that help explain how we arrived at our present moment. To read these stories, visit ourstate.com/tribute-to-Philip. That's Philip with one L. There's no word on what's going to happen to the decade of the 90s. I'm sure he had completed one or two of them at least. I don't know whether they'll publish them. They'll have somebody else do it or not. We'll just have to wait and see. But thank you, Philip Gerard, for all your wonderful stories. And now, let's warm up to winter. Brr, it's cold outside. But with a crackling fire, a steamy bath, piping hot cocoa, and the softest socks, frozen season becomes cozy season. There's a picture here of a crackling fire, the embers firing off into the air. The flickering flames inside the two 12-by-6-foot fireplaces at the Omni Grove Park Inn in Asheville keep the Great Hall toasty, even on the coldest of winter nights. Sparks of inspiration. A writer finds seeds of contemplation in the gentle roar of two massive fireplaces at Asheville Omni Grove Park Inn. Picture of the inn here, it's all stone on the outside. And the roof, I don't know what the roof is made of, but it's a wonderful sort of a camel color. Very, very pretty, especially since there's a big overhang at the first level over the entrance. And here is a gentleman in top coat and hat with a long instrument poking at the fire. The fireplace is as tall as he is. It says, when the flames die down in the Grove Park Inn's great fireplaces, a bellhop clad in traditional cap and long red coat arrives to stoke the coals. When I stare into a fireplace, I am powerfully moved to say something profound. The gentle rhapsody of the flames, the flickering orange glow, the crackling wood, the rising sparks, seems to provide the perfect backdrop for a statement that expresses a central truth about the human condition. Perhaps I could say, every book is a quotation. As my companions look up in approval, I could go on. Every house is a quotation out of all forests and mines and stone quarries. Nodding my head sagaciously, I could continue, and every man is a quotation from all his ancestors. Ralph Waldo Emerson said that first, but remains as profound as anything, and it's one of the world's great fireplace quotations, which is probably why it's printed on one of the world's great fireplaces. I'm talking about the enormous fireplaces inside the vast Great Hall at the Omni Grove Park Inn in Asheville. It's here that I've found the soothing crackle and hiss that I've been searching for my whole life. The inn's two fireplaces are gigantic, 36 feet wide, 12 long strides from end to end, and built entirely of granite stones wrestled from the living rock of the surrounding mountains. Their openings, only 12 feet wide and 6 feet tall, are comparatively small, but what really dwarfs them are the boulders from which the surrounds are built. Together, the two structures comprise about 120 tons of granite. A single boulder, said to weigh upward of 5,000 pounds, serves as a mantle above each grate. Even the andirons weigh 500 pounds each. But measurements cannot really express the magnificence of these things. They squat at either end of the great hall, the inn's main lobby, like a great jungle animals staring one another down. Wooden rockers line the flagstone hearths, and you can sit and rock and swirl bourbon from the lobby bar. You can feel as profound as you care to as you read the nuggets of wisdom etched into the sides of many of the boulders. Be not simply good, be good for something, from Henry David Thoreau, or The Sun Will Shine After Every Storm, again attributed to Emerson. I'm spending the evening just sitting by these fireplaces. I came down to the lobby with a journal, books, a smartphone, all of the entertainments with which we arm ourselves against our lack of profundity. But I never crack book nor turn on phone. Instead, I ponder, silently, those quotations on the rocks. How much pain have cost us the evils which have never happened, Thomas Jefferson reflects. Or, according to a Dutch proverb, the gem cannot be polished without friction, nor man perfected without trials. The quotes were chosen by Fred Seeley, a pharmacist. Let me back up and explain. When the Grove Park Inn opened in 1913, the brainchild of Tennessee pharmacist Edwin Wiley Grove, Southerners were beset with malaria. Quinine fought the disease, but tasted awful. Grove mixed quinine with lemon flavoring, sugar, and iron, and by the 1890s, Grove's tasteless chill tonic was earning him $1 million a year, outselling even another new Southern beverage, Coca-Cola. Grove would visit Asheville, and then, when his health began to suffer, made a summer home there. He soon joined up with a fellow pharmacist, Seeley, who'd marry Grove's daughter. After the nearby Biltmore House was completed in 1895, Grove began buying mountaintop property for development, eventually deciding to build what he hoped would be a fine inn. Seeley suggested something similar to Yellowstone National Park's Old Faithful Inn, though made of rock rather than wood. By the way, I'm going to stop here for a moment. There's pictures here of the construction. It says stonemasons, some of whom also worked in the Biltmore House, used chains and pulleys, which are shown in these pictures, to move boulders into the Great Hall in 1913. And here's the Great Hall, and there are boulders all over the floor. They've been broken into pieces at this point, and all the masons are standing around in their work clothes, the type of jean-type outfit that comes up to their chest and then goes over the back, held up with suspenders mostly. And they all have hats on, and then there's the supervisor standing in the middle, and there's a big pile of sand in there to help make some cement, I guess. Now regarded as one of the great inns of the world, Grove Park is a massive pile of stone built by many of the same imported workers who had worked on Vanderbilt's little cottage down the road. From the start, Grove wanted his inn to offer a retreat from the hurly-burly of life in the rapidly mechanizing 20th century. Everything about the inn was designed for rest. The enormous Great Hall has a 24-foot ceiling supported by gigantic columns. Now clad in glowing wood, the columns were first made of stone, and the inn's water pipes ran inside of them to preserve the quiet. Guests were expected to be silent after 10 p.m. They were even asked to quietly remove their shoes and avoid running water. The elevators, their mechanisms built in those vast stone fireplaces, again for silence, have window shades that once reminded guests to be quiet. And if those who gathered at the Great Inn became too noisy, hotel staff would glide up and silently present a card, "Please be more subdued." During my visit, the guests are not subdued. Even as midnight nears, jokes elicit hearty laughs and squeals of tipsy glee that echo around the great hall. I don't mind. I'm here for the fireplaces, and all of these other people are part of the experience. And those fireplaces at the south end of the room, where I sit in a low, comfortable arts and crafts style armchair, it is hot. I mean hot, hot. Several four-foot logs gently crackle atop a heap of ashes that stands a good 2 feet tall. The orange glow from within looks hot enough to melt Frodo's ring. My chair is separated from the flames by a hearth, a row of rockers, a flagstone walkway, and a 36-inch table, and it's still warm enough that I have to remove my sweater. I sit peacefully, gazing at the fire from a safe distance, in the dim light emanating from the square chandeliers. And if you think the lights are dim now, shining through translucent panels, imagine the early days of the inn when, to encourage peace and quiet, the chandeliers had opaque bottoms. The stone floor and walls make the room feel like the mountain house of my dreams, and I watch a changing cast of characters line up at the fireplace, stand only for a moment, take a photo, and then move on to escape the heat. People take pictures of the fireplaces all day long, my waitress tells me, and they'll complain if the logs aren't burning. Though, even with exhaust fans now installed in the chimneys, you can't light a wood fire if it's warmer than 55 degrees outside. A big fireplace has needs that you just have to respect. People also try to drag logs into the fire from a nearby wood cart, ignoring the signs that tell them not to. The desire to add wood to a fire eventually being equal to the desire to say something profound. I did neither. Instead, occupying myself with those quotations, like the one on the enormous rock that functions as the mantle of the south fireplace. It reads, "Take this from this hearth its warmth, from this room its charm, from this inn its amity. Return them not, but return." That was written by Scott Hewler, senior staff writer at Duke Magazine and the author of numerous books, including A Delicious Country, which retraces the journey of explorer John Lawson. Want to visit the Omni Grove Park Inn, like I would like to do? They're at Macon Avenue in Asheville, and there's a really long email web address, but start at omnihotels.com, and you'll find it from there. And now, soaking in hot springs. For centuries, this Madison County town has beckoned visitors to bathe in the soothing, warming waters that bubble up from deep within the mountains. Written by T. Edward Nickens. This is no everyday soothing soak. It's no ordinary relaxing bath. The water bubbles out of the ground at an awe-inducing 110 degrees Fahrenheit, flowing at a sprightly 160 gallons per minute. Pumped a quarter mile down the mountain, it's treated with a blast of ultraviolet light to further purify Mother Nature's own high standards for clean geothermal spring water, and then it flows through private bathing cabanas at Hot Springs Resort and Spa, built just a river stone's throw from Spring Creek and the French Broad River. The spring water is naturally carbonated, so it opens up pores in the skin. It has an elevated dose of magnesium, lauded for healthy benefits, and it's low in sulfur, so it smells as clean as the mountain air. Soaking in the water, which is pumped through a jetted hot tub in a private cabana that nearly very nearly purchase over a mountain brook, is very good living. My wife Julie would agree, but at the moment I'm not sure if I could rouse her from her deep trance. Taking to healing waters is a centuries-old tradition the world over, a pursuit with its own body of knowledge and customs. It's known as balneology, the scientific study of therapeutic bathing, and Hot Springs Resort is indeed part of the Balneology Association of North America, an industry trade group with members from California and New Mexico as well, also the Hollers of Southern Appalachia. And that's why Julie and I are here, to further our understanding of this ancient and revered practice, to explore the history of one of North Carolina's most renowned and historic mineral baths, to take part in a somewhat unscientific, okay, entirely unscientific, study of therapeutic bathing. For the weekend, at least, we are dedicated balneologists. In fact, I try throughout our visit to Hot Springs to get Julie to call me professor, but never mind. The historic 100 acres Hot Spring Resort and Spa lies just across the railroad tracks from the tiny downtown of Hot Springs, where the Appalachian Trail runs down the main drag, the Lance Avenue, deep in a mountain cleft some 35 miles northwest of Asheville. In the 1830s, the enormous Warm Springs, or Patton, Hotel was built, setting the stage for a century-long tenure of lavish lifestyles punctuated with natural disasters. After the Warm Springs Hotel burned in 1884, it was replaced with an even more extravagant resort. The 200-room Mountain Park Hotel boasted one of the first golf courses in North Carolina. Guests reclined in 9-foot-long marble pools and had access to bowling alleys, tennis courts, and riding stables. A typical therapeutic stay lasts 21 days. The famous and the wealthy flocked to Mountain Park. O. Henry spent his 1907 honeymoon here. When it burned in 1920, it was replaced with yet another spa resort, the Hot Springs Inn. And there, according to local lore, is where fate took its most modern turn in regard to the future of the famed resort. In the 1950s, according to Heather Hicks, the resort's general manager, a local young man who was increasingly intrigued with the geology of mineral springs was turned away at the front desk of the Hot Springs Inn. Humiliated and angry, he swore that he would return one day to buy the resort and turn it into a place that welcomed everyone, no matter their social or financial standing. His name was Gene Hicks, a distant cousin to Heather, and in the 1990, after making a small fortune in aviation, he did exactly what he said he was going to do. Today, Hot Springs Resort and Spa reflects Gene Hicks' philosophy. Fire and floods have swept away most traces of the elite resorts of yore. Now a gorgeous campground lies alongside the French Broad River, and a wide array of lodgings is scattered throughout the nearby woods, from small, simple cabins to luxurious townhome suites and private homes with their own mineral water baths. And all are welcome, whether you show up in muddy hiking boots or a Rolls Royce. During our weekend visit, Julie and I bunked in a cozy wooden cabin in the resort's riverside campground. On Saturday, we packed a trail lunch and took a long morning hike to Lover's Leap, a soaring rock promontory with stunning views of the French Broad River and Bluff Mountain. Afterward, we walked into town. The resort is located within 100 yards of the winsome Little Hot Springs Business District, where we did a little bit of pre-shopping reconnaissance, trading our riverside views for people watching along the bustling few blocks of restaurants, shops, and general stores, all of which culminated in our late afternoon mineral water bath reservation. While some suite and large home lodges come with their own private tubs, most visitors schedule a mineral bath experience at one of the 16 outdoor tubs along the French Broad River and Spring Creek. The bath experiences run from $50 an hour to $300. And in keeping with Gene Hick's philosophy of public access. There are mineral water baths tailored for everyone, from families seeking a fun afternoon with the kids, to hikers soothing trail-worn muscles, to couples interested in seclusion and privacy. The baths are astoundingly popular. Some 70,000 guests take a dip in the resort's tubs each year, and the pandemic has put a premium on healthy outdoor recreation. Reservations can sell out weeks in advance. I'll be honest. When it came to the therapeutic and restorative properties of a mineral water bath, I was somewhat skeptical. Even Julie had second thoughts when we saw that our slot was 90 minutes long. "I can't do anything for an hour and a half straight," she joked. "We figured we'd be in and out in 30 minutes tops." Our premium-level tub was set on a raised platform, and the cabana included a private bath and shower. There was a gas fire pit, as well as a comfy chaise lounge and a sofa that looked and felt like they'd been lifted from a high-end cruise ship. There was a wine cooler by the tub and luxurious robes hanging nearby. "I didn't expect this," Julie said with a contented sigh. Spring Creek gurgled by, not 10 feet from the cabana, and the late afternoon sun bejeweled the brook with sparkling highlights. We soaked, we lounged, we drank wine, we repeated. After 5 minutes before our hour and a half was up, the resort staff gently knocked the cabana door to let us know the sand was running out of the glass. "What? Huh?" I said, so relaxed that single-syllable words were all I could form. "Now? Really?" Julie protested. I can't say what was in the hot springs water that seemed to calm my nerves and lower my heart rate, but I'm totally open to trying it again. Just to fact-check my research, and maybe even a third time if needed. Rocket science may be permanently out of my reach, but I think a new career as a traveling balneologist just might be my next calling. Hot Springs Resort and Spa, 315 Bridge Street, Hot Springs, North Carolina. nchotsprings.com. You know what's missing from this article? I was looking forward to explaining to you exactly what one of these tubs looked like, and all I can find is a picture of an outdoor cabana. It's taken in winter. There's the snow on the ground and snow on the stairs going up to this room, which has like 6-foot-high walls, and then 2 more feet above that are open, and then a roof. And here's a picture of a fireplace, but that's the best I'm going to have. They don't actually show a tub. They do show the inside of a wooden cavern and the outside. But that's it, so I can't tell you about the tubs. You will have to go there yourself and report back. Well, that's all the time we have for today's episode of Our State Magazine. Hope you enjoyed it and that you enjoyed it enough that you'll come back next week to listen again. I'm Fred Brack, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's reading of Our State Magazine was underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving our community since 1974. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Our State Magazine is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. Questions, comments, please call the Reading Service at 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.